Good afternoon. This is Leatherneck Magazine's Andrew Lubin. Today we're talking with Colonel William Gillespie, Commanding Officer of the Advisor Training Group at 29 Palms, California. Colonel, thanks for taking the time today.
Pleasure's all mine, Professor.
Colonel, tell us what the Advisor Training Group does. You've been out there now for a year plus. Can you tell us what you're training your Marines to do?
Well, our mission is to train Marines and sailors to be advisors for Afghanistan National Security Forces. That is the Afghan Army, Afghan Police, Afghan border units. We train them to do their job.
Okay. Now, are you, since you're sending Marines over there, are you sending them just to Helmand Province, to RC Southwest, or are they going all around the country?
For the most part, the advisors are going to Helmand Province, about 95% of them, 98%. Helmand and Nimruz province. On occasion, we'll get tasked with providing advisors in, for other regions, but by and large, our focus is on RC Southwest, Regional Command Southwest, which is Helmand and Nimruz provinces.
Yeah. Colonel, with the announcement last week from President Obama and Prime Minister Karzai about pulling the American troops out and putting them in an advisor and training role earlier, does this affect your mission at all?
Essentially, it does not. We've been singularly focused here at Advisor Training Group for the last 3 years at least, 2.5 years, with training Marines to be advisors for Afghanistan. So it's just a more emphasis placed on the mission and the criticality of advisors in Afghanistan. About a year ago, February 2011, General Allen, the ISAF commander, announced his guidance to the troop-contributing nations and the services about the critical role of advisors in Afghanistan. He said that the security force assistance is the path for Afghan security, and that it's absolutely important that we invest in the development and training, providing high-quality training for the SVATs, we call SVATs, the Security Force Assistant Advisor Teams, their preparation to do their mission. So we've been focused like a laser on that preparation.
Sir, part of the announcement last week was that the Marines and soldiers will be coming out of the villages and, I guess, going back to the big FOBs. How do you train if you're stuck on a FOB? Are you able to get out there, or does that part of the announcement not affect you?
That part of the announcement does not necessarily affect us, except for it'll be fewer coalition forces outside the wire. But essentially, the job of the advisor is to interact with their counterparts as much as they can, and providing mentorship and exposing them to the leadership styles that are generally very productive for us in the Marine Corps.
Yeah. Sir, how do you get the Marines? Are they volunteers? Are they picked? How do you you're sending over teams of 15 to 20. How do you get them?
Well, the MEFs select top-notch guys to fill in those positions. Particularly now that we're drawing down with the operating forces, the number of battalions that are in the area, we have a greater pool to pull Marines and sailors from. And those guys who enjoy the experience of working with Afghans or people from a different country and different cultures, they're drawn to this mission. So we've gotten a lot of motivated Marines to volunteer for the position. But generally speaking, as it is with most Marine Corps mission, you get tapped to go to a place and you do the best you can. And I think more importantly, our training is so comprehensive. We prepare folks who aren't necessarily have the natural attributes to interact with folks of a different culture.
But you must have a lot of Marines volunteering who've been off to Iraq and Afghanistan before. So do they come in with some basic rudimentary language skills?
Well, we have a requirement that all of the advisors get some exposure to the language from sitting in a classroom. And they'll do that training primarily at their home station, either Camp Pendleton, Camp Lejeune, Okinawa, Hawaii, at home station. And then when they come here at our MRX and our graduate level program, we have a couple hundred Afghan speaking role players who we provide an immersive environment for the Marines to practice that skills, that language skills, those cultural skills, so that when they actually deploy, they'll have some familiarity with the language and with the culture.
So yours is very hands-on training then?
Absolutely. We provide a robust complement of the type of equipment that they will train on in country. We replicate it in every area that we can. That we'll have MRAPs, MATVs, those sort of vehicles. We'll provide them with exposure to BATS, which is the biometric training systems, the metal detectors, the crew serve weapons from our country. We expose them to the foreign weapons that the Afghans use. So yes, sir, we have a pretty robust complement of equipment that the Marines and sailors can train on.
Colonel, much of the Marine mindset is very aggressive. Do you find it difficult, or let me phrase, how do you teach the Marines and sailors to go over there and take a step back where if there's a combat situation, they're not the lead that their Afghan counterpart has to lead? How do you address that?
Yes, part of our training, the first thing is to understand the culture, the environment that they're going to. We have classes that talks to the fundamental difference in the way, frankly, most of the world operate, the prism that they see the world, and contrast the way we Westerners see the world. For example, in our country, we're in the Western countries, we're kind of individual focus. It's all about us. We have our Bill of Rights. In their culture, in most of the world, it's about collective perspective. It's about the family. It's about the tribe. So from that perspective, getting the cultural, environmental perspective is the first thing. The second thing is, as you suggested, Marines tend to be very aggressive, and you have to be effective combat leaders. The role and relationship of an advisor and mentor is substantially different than that of a Marine on the tip of the spear in combat operations in a country. That is, he or she is in a position where they need to step back and train and mentor, advise the host nation forces on how to effectively operate. So it's a more over-the-shoulder type perspective, relationship that's needed to effectively do the job.
Would that mean then you're looking for older Marines? And I don't mean obviously 40-plus, but somebody, you're not looking for your younger first or second deployment enlisted man, I don't think. You need somewhat more mature and with a more steady view of the world.
Maturity, experience, those are all critical traits and that complement the mission. Yes, it's easier if you have a broad breadth of experience to be able to effectively advise and persuade, influence foreign culture. And also, given their culture, it's the gray beards, as we call them, are perceived by their community as being wiser. So, yes, there's some advantage of being older, more mature. But that said, we think our training and experience we provide during the pre-deployment training process will compensate for the potential lack of years on the earth, if you know what I mean.
Too well, unfortunately. So, Colonel, did the Marines going and sailors going over, did they remain in the uniform, or they all had some leeway as far as growing beards and all, as far as like the Special Forces do?
Well, our Marine, the Marine sailors that are going over, we stick with our uniform requirements. In fact, we think it's value added because we're trying to set the example for the Afghan security forces. When they see the way the pride and confidence that the Marines have in uniform and the way they execute their mission, we think that that they emulate us. So, and the Afghans expect us to do that. So, we don't get out of uniform and grow beards and go native.
Yeah, right. You're with the 215th Corps in RC Southwest. What kind of feedback do you have from the Afghan officers and men about your training program?
It's been very positive. The Afghans that I've talked with, I recently returned from Afghanistan. I was there last month in December, and they were very pleased with the training and preparation that our advisors have. I specifically remember talking with the district chief of police in Sangin district. And he had a number of compliments that he paid to his advisor teams, and he was so appreciative of their sensitivity and their understanding of the Afghan mission that I think we're doing pretty good, if I do say so myself.
Good to hear. Would it be fair to say then that at least as far as 215th Corps can stand up and be on its own once the United States and NATO leaves in 2014?
I'm reluctant to say that because I don't have the daily visibility on that, and I'll leave that judgment up to General Gaganis and the others that make that assessment. I believe in my heart of hearts that they will be able to, but I don't want to preempt the RC commander's decision and comments on that.
Yeah, fair enough. We're trying to put you on the spot as far as a written in stone forecast. But they're appreciably better than they were 3 years ago, though, correct?
Absolutely. There's the 215 Corps, or the soldiers that comprise the Corps, as well as the police from the Ministry of Interior that are there, have grown better and better in their jobs, and it's certainly been a good partnership with U.S. Marines and the United Kingdom forces in that region. So yes, they are appreciably better.
Excellent. You know, follow-up question: since RC Southwest is predominantly Marines and the U.K., do you have people from the U.K. coming in for your training?
Absolutely. We've been very fortunate to have a number of enablers, if you will, to join us over the last several months. We've had lieutenant colonels from the United Kingdom attend our training. They provide a rich degree of experience because many of them are going on their third or fourth rotation, if you will, into Afghanistan. So they complement our teams considerably with their experience in country. Additionally, we have LEPs, law enforcement professionals, joining our teams for the police teams, and they provide a rich degree of experience. The LEPs are typically will have 20 to 25 years of experience in U.S. law enforcement procedures. So when you add the lieutenant colonels that are coming through our training, and lieutenant colonels are generally on the more senior teams, they're not on all the teams, from the U.K., and you add with the police units, the LEPS, law enforcement professionals, joining the teams and training with them here in 29 Palms. The capability and the quality and the interaction between inside the team is exponentially increased, and their ability to influence and shape the ANSEF, Afghan National Security Forces, ability is just amazing.
It's good to hear. Colonel, you've got a busy schedule. What can you tell? What would you like to tell us about the Marine and Navy effort with your ATG teams?
Oh, it's been extraordinary support from the top to the bottom. All of the MEF commanders are completely on board. We've been very fortunate for the MEF commanders to personally see how the training is progressing and providing all the resources necessarily to get the teams in a posture so they can most effectively train and to remove any type of training inhibitors. All the folks on the ground, the staff, there's a huge unity of effort and making sure that the support is available here at MAGTAF TC at 29 Palms to make that happen. So we're very appreciative of all the help we're getting from the Navy Marine Corps team.
Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. It's good to know things are going so well. This is Leatherneck Magazine's Andrew Lubin. Today we've been speaking with Colonel William Gillespie, Commanding Officer of the Advisor Training Group, 29 Palms MAGTAF. Colonel, thank you for being with us today.
Yes, sir. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for talking with us, sharing this with the people, the Marines in our great country.